HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Welcome to season 2 of our podcast Kicks for Free, in which we discuss all things football. I am Dhiman, and with me is my co-host Vivek.
Messi.
Napoli.
I don't know where to begin.
First time I saw a football match, I was speaking with my father. I asked him, who are we supporting? He said, the blue guys. I said, why? He gave me two answers. First one, because this is the team of our city.
Something changed with the arrival of Aurelio De Laurentiis.
Not since 1989-90. Have Italy been cloaked in the electric blue of Napoli, like they are now. Even then, the title march went down to the wire. Napoli beating a stiff challenge from AC Milan on the final day to win their second Serie A title. 1 year later, Diego Maradona left amid all usual controversies. The cult of Maradona was notorious for, and Napoli's decline began. Historically, and in the last 3 decades as well, Serie A has been dominated by Juventus, AC Milan and Inter Milan at different stages. Dhiman, how special is this achievement by Napoli?
Anything that takes 33 years to happen has to be really special. Naples turned out in blue last Sunday, hoping that the wait would end at home. And when left-back Matias Oliveira headed home a corner kick in the 62nd minute, the Maradona was enveloped in blue haze. Outside the stadium, people had gathered waiting to start the party. We've read reports of traffic restrictions being imposed to keep celebrations within a manageable area rather than, you know, it spreading all over the city. I don't know how they would do that, but they surely tried. But the party had to be put on hold because Bulaye Dia cut in from the right and went past two players. Ironically, two players for whose contribution to Napoli's run this time have been possibly the most, Victor Osimhen and Kvicha Fara-Shekilia. He cut past them and then he fired in to score the equalizer, which meant that the celebrations had to be put on hold.
And it's Matias Oliveira, the most unlikely of scorers, to give Napoli the lead. An hour that felt like a lifetime. But after 33 years, it is the left back who starts the party in Fuorigrotta.
Bulaye Dia, nicely done. Still Bulaye Dia!
Salernitana shock Napoli. 7 minutes to play, and the title celebrations have been curtailed.
Full-time score at the Maradona. Surprisingly, Napoli 1, Salernitana 1.
The similarity with Argentina is striking, isn't it, Dhiman? Argentina won the World Cup last year after Maradona's death in 2020. And now Napoli win the Serie A. It is almost as if Maradona's feats and his genius were weighing too heavily on these teams.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. And, you know, it was Sergio Levinsky, the Argentine journalist who's written extensively on Maradona and who's been to every World Cup since 1986, who told me in Doha that Maradona's death has freed the Argentina team. I mean, he told me that, you know, imagine Maradona being in the stands for the Argentina-Saudi Arabia game. So in the case of Napoli, maybe I think the connection is not that strong. But it is definitely possible that the legacy of Napoli's phenomenal achievements during the Maradona years from 1984 to 1991 has weighed the team down. I mean, how else do you explain the fact that Napoli were second four times in the last decade? It could be because of a lot of things, but it's difficult to completely ignore the Maradona effect altogether.
What Maradona did do was change the perception, I guess, of Napoli as a club. I remember watching Asif Kapadia's documentary after Argentina's World Cup victory. And that shed some light on how Napoli back in the 80s were ridiculed as a club with no history and tradition. And people from Naples were almost treated like second-class citizens. And Maradona's success perhaps allowed people there, the locals, to walk around with pride and gave them a certain identity. Do you think that is why he was revered so much in that part of the world?
Yeah, I mean, that's possibly the most obvious reason. And I remember reading recently that, you know, not much of that has changed. I mean, in the sense that not much of Italy's opinion of Naples or the south of Italy has changed from the time it was when Maradona joined the club. So, you know, Kapadia's documentary was on Maradona and it was curated from content that was available because Maradona lived a very public life. I think the point you're making is possibly better understood by the 2021 film, The Hand of God, by Paolo Sorrentino. It's autobiographical in content and it talks about his growing up years in Naples. But what was interesting for me in that film was that, you know, how Naples was reacting to the impending arrival of Maradona. It is tough for conversation at a family lunch. You know, the bank agreeing to fund Maradona's purchase makes its way into a conversation between a man and wife. Maradona's training sessions become an occasion for the city to get together. The film has very little to do with the hand of God or Maradona, but it's almost as if, you know, how Maradona had an impact on the city, which is very difficult to ignore, even when you're talking about, even when the film is a very personal account of a boy growing up, dealing with situations in his that helped him grow up, with Maradona always as the background. Now, I think that film sort of conveys what Maradona meant to the city of Naples. You know, the thing is that it is not as if Napoli, which was founded in 1926, didn't have famous foreign players before Maradona. They had Attila Salustro playing for them in the 1920s and 30s. They had the Brazilians Luis Vinicio and Jose Altafini in the 50s. And that famous Italian Argentine who's played for both countries, Omar Sivori, I think between 1955 to 69, or it could be 65 to 69. So they had these players who were playing, famous foreign players who had done well for the club. But, of course, no one, you know, no one came close to being the world's best player at that point in time. And, you know, no one came close to being the world's best player who was coming to a city forgotten by Italy, a city which always got the wrong end of the stick in a country dominated by its north. So never had that city got the world's best player. So even before he arrived, and that is what I think this film talks about, which I found interesting, was that even before he had arrived in Napoli, he'd got cult status. And of course, what he did thereafter, you know, winning two Scudetti, the UEFA Cup, the Italian Super Cup. And then there's this incredible clip, which is now available on YouTube, where Maradona warms up. I think that's before a game against Bayern Munich in the semi-final of the UEFA Cup. To incredible music. I think it's Live His Life by Opus. And he does that. And then now imagine being a Neapolitan and seeing that happen in one of the world's famous stadiums at one of the world's most famous clubs. And you would obviously end up feeling very proud about the fact that it's happening. It's being done by somebody who you can identify with. So I think what he did really elevated Naples' stature and that of Napoli. And it didn't harm things that, you know, he won the World Cup as Argentina captain in 1986. So I think that all of that put together is why now, even us, let's say, if we think of Naples, even now, after all these years, I think the first thing we'd possibly think of is Maradona. I mean, that kind of explains why the city reveres him in the way it does.
Right. As we mentioned earlier, unfortunately, once Maradona left, the club ran into sharp decline. I think they were even relegated on a few occasions.
Right.
Yeah. Deman, talking about this season, their success has been built, as we mentioned, on the goals by Victor Osimhen and Kwecha Kvaratskhelia has provided quite a few assists as well. Osimhen is the leading goal scorer of the season. He has 21 goals. I read somewhere that He's modeled his game on Didier Drogba, and he could certainly attract the interest of top clubs in England, isn't it, given his playing style?
Playing in one of the top five leagues in the world is amazing feeling for me and a good feat. But of course, a lot of people worldwide consider the Premier League as the best and the strongest league. But of course, I'm on a process, I'm in a phase. So now I'm in one of the best league in the world, which is the Italian Serie A. Of course, I'm working so hard to make sure that I achieve my dream in playing, of course, in the Premier League someday.
Yeah, well, Osimhen told the TV broadcaster PSL that he's working hard to be able to do what Drogba has done for his country. I mean, that said, you know, barring a Messi move back to Barcelona or to Saudi Arabia, now that his relationship with PSG has hit what looks like a point of no return, Osimhen is likely to be the most talked about transfer this summer. There have been reports of Arsenal and Chelsea being interested in him, although I don't know where Chelsea is going to find the money for, given the amount of spending that they have done and given the amount of chaos that it has invited in the club. Also, Real Madrid and Manchester United are interested in him too, and Napoli are going to charge a packet for him. Obviously, it is said that he's going to cost around £132 million. And if Real have already closed in on Bellingham, I am not sure whether they'll have the money to spend on another player. So it is possible that he could be coming to England. But where is something that the next few months will tell us.
Right. One of the challenges for clubs like Napoli, of course, is to keep hold of their players. Diman, how easy do you think it's going to be for them to build on this success? Because players in Italy are no longer in as high demand as they were, I guess, earlier. But it's going to be difficult, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, they'll have to not just hold on to Osimhen. They'll have to hold on to a number of players, really, to be consistent in Italy and in Europe. There's goalkeeper Alex Meret, you know, Piotr Zielinski, Amir Rahmani, Irving Lozano and Varach Kelia. So these are players that they'll have to hold on to. And if there is an exodus, then this again becomes one off in the history of a club that is Italy's fourth most supported club, by the way. So it will have to be seen how they can hold on to these players. And you know, given the financial situation of Serie A, it can be very difficult for clubs to spurn attractive offers, you know, given how difficult running a football club is. I am interested in seeing how Napoli deal with the increased interest in players. I mean, they've got players for a steal. Kvaratskhelia was got in for next to nothing. They did pay a lot for Osimhen. But so, you know, once these players become famous, once there's a lot of interest, can they be like a Dortmund and hold on to Bellingham in the way they have? That's something that the next few months will tell us.
On the whole, this has been a good season for Italian football. Apart from Napoli's title match catching the eye, we have AC Milan and Inter Milan in the semi-finals of the Champions League. Through the 80s and 90s, all the top players used to be playing in the Serie A, and it used to be quite normal for Italian teams to be involved in the latter stages of the European Cup that was rebranded as the Champions League from 92 onwards. Can Italian football ever go back to those glory days, or do you think the competition has just moved on and the quality of football in England, Spain and Germany is too high for Italian football to now bridge that gap?
You know, it was great really in the 1980s and 90s, wasn't it? You know, pretty much everyone who was anyone played in Italy. You know, you had Gullit, Rijkaard, Van Basten, you had Zico, Maradona, Falcao, Socrates, Klinsmann, Mateus, Bremer, Zidane, the Brazilian phenomenon, Ronaldo, Ian Rush, Platini, and this list is by no means exhaustive. So, it was great at that point in time, but in this, things change, and television money, like you said, you know, the reason why the Premier League or La Liga, or even the Bundesliga is where it is because it commands greater television money, which again is ploughed back to the clubs. Now, the Premier League outstrips all these leagues. I read that, you know, it's only the gridiron NFL and the IPL, which generates more in terms of domestic revenue per game. Now, obviously, the games in IPL are fewer, the league is shorter, but so the overall amount may not match up, but the IPL does generate significant amount of television revenue. So the Premier League, given the kind of money it generates, given the kind of money that there is in the English game, I mean, some years back, we had a situation where Chris Coleman who had taken Wales to the semi-final was joining Sunderland as coach when Sunderland were nowhere close to the top division. Marcelo Bielsa comes to join Leeds United when Leeds United are in the championship. Now, that is the kind of project that a team can create even though they are out of the top tier. Now, that is not something I see happening in Italy or in any other country in Europe except for England. So, it is very difficult to see Italian football get back to its glory days. But by glory days, if you mean, you know, going deep into European competitions, well, that has happened this year and not just in the Champions League. So, even if it does not last, I'm sure it does definitely calls for some celebration at this point in time.
That was it for this episode. If you want to reach out to us, you can find us on our Twitter handles at Vivek9301 and at DemanHT. If you're a true football fan, you cannot not subscribe to Kickoff, our weekly newsletter on the World Game, which hits inboxes every Friday. For more updates on this podcast, follow HT Smartcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And to listen to more such podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.